Yes, the sergeant in house coat and slippers.
He's standing at the bar, having a beer, wearing his house coat and his slippers, and the SWO walks in, the senior warrant officer. Now, CFB Griesbach is run by the Air Force, and the SWO was a senior warrant officer, chief warrant officer in the Air Force. And he comes up and he said, you're improperly dressed to be in the mess. Well, John says to him, when you're at home, you wear your, when you're at home and you're having an evening drink, you wear your house with a coat and slippers. He said, it doesn't matter, you know. John's wife threw him up years ago, I think. He had two or three wives. He had a good wife at the end. But anyways, he was at the time living in single man's quarters, senior NCO quarters. And the SWO wrote him up right away. He went and said, okay, 30 days dismissed from the mess. Well, John was all sad, and he took his beer with him, and he left. Then he had us guys getting him jugs of beer, taking him over to the quarters next door. you know, but he did the 30 days. And then he never wore his house coat and slippers, but he was gutsy, you know. He did things. And anyway, at the time, he was a CSM. And I think he was a captain when he retired. He went CFR, and, you know, I mean, eventually. But he was a gutsy guy. And Tiny really likes him, you know, he admires him. And anybody who worked for him admired him. He was tough. And if you had to keep up with him, you worked hard. You know, he's a good run. I was infantry, and I took all the guys from around the headquarters and that. There was intelligence guys and postal clerks, some sub-techs, drivers, stuff, people like that. And I took them out. The old man wanted everybody to pass the battle PT with flying colors. So he got me in his office and he said, take these guys out. He said, Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for the next, you know, month and a half, 2 months, and run the 10 miler. So I did. You know, we did it first without any packs or anything, and we had to carry guys over the line and all that. And nobody failed, but everybody made it within the 2 hours, but there were guys who were throwing up. So we kept doing it, and then we put on our webbing, and we carry our weapons. And we carry all our packs, you know, and we kept doing it. And we got to the point, and whenever we marched like the Queen's Own do. That's 140 paces to the minute, whereas the normal infantry line march 120 paces to the minute. So if you do that, and you jog every once in a while, and when you stop to rest, you're doing 140 paces to the minute. You're passing the RCR guys and the Highlanders and all these other guys who are marching 120. They don't know that, but you are, you see. So, and I had all these guys who were like Service Corps and Ordnance Corps and Pay Corps, and whatever they were. I had them all, and they were all in the RHQ. And then the old man himself, full Colonel Rochester, father of the Airborne Regiment, he was Airborne Engineers. And he had the Order of the British Empire or something, a whole pile of medals, World War II and all that. But he was engineers, like the guys that build the bridges and blow them up and all that. So he took the airborne engineers to his house on the regimental birthday. I guess he had it all figured out when the regimental birthday was. But anyways, he bought all the booze and all this, and they're all drinking. But he only drank one beer. So they all drank all kinds of beer. And at 3 o'clock in the morning, he says to the sergeant major, oh, yeah, tomorrow we're doing battle PT, and I want you to make sure the guys are all there because I want to make sure that the engineers have a good showing. Well, these guys are all over and drunk. So anyways, we get out the next morning, and he's running with us. He's not running with the engineers. He's RHQ. He's the head of RHQ. You know, he said, is everybody here this morning, Sergeant Wilbon? I said, yes, sir. So these guys have been training for 2 months. I mean, they've been doing it Monday, Wednesday, and Friday, you know. And at first, you should have heard, they were all pissed off at me. You know, you son of a bitch, you know, because I was infantry. And I said, well, everybody has to do it. You're a commando now. You're in the airborne regiment. It doesn't matter if you're a supply technician. You got to be able to keep up. But they were really good by the end of this training, you see. So The old man's running. He's out front. He's running along. Now, the two commando took off first, and then the airborne artillery, the battery took off, and then the airborne engineers took off. And then we took off, our HQ, we were taking off more, so we're going down the road. We got about a mile down the road, and all these guys are over the side throwing up, and they were all, you know, and he goes like this, the colonel, he goes like this. And he had been planning that for months. Months! And he did that to his own guys. But they all made it. They carried one or two guys, or they were carrying all their equipment. They just made it within the 2 hours, but they made it. They all passed their battle PT. But the part of it is that it was really hard for them because of the drinking all night and no sleep. You know? And the thing is, that guy was a tactician. He had planned that for at least 3 or 4 months, because he knew when the regimental birthday was, and he knew he wanted to get his guys in RSQ in shape. So he had all this, and he schemed that. Big smile on his face, you know. He's an old guy, real smart. I really missed him when the MO took him off the jump line. I was injured the same time he was injured. That's what I got my pension for. But I stayed on. I was only 27 or something, and he was 50-something. Anyways, the MO took him off the jump line. And he retired after that, and he became an Anglican priest in Chilliwack. He passed away a few years ago, but he's the father of the Canadian Airborne Regiment, Colonel Don Rochester. A great man.
So we're coming to the end here, and I just have a couple more questions I'd like to ask you.
Sure.
So in the years before your departure, because you left in 78, I think I have here. Mm-hmm. Did you notice sort of missions and battlefield or any kind of deployments becoming more and more, making use more of the rules of engagement and other kind of firing orders? Did you notice that development?
Well, it was starting to change. They were running out of people. Mm-hmm. They downsized the forces to where the, like I said, it was captains that used to go to Namibia. Now they were down to sergeants. Because I was going to go to Namibia before I retired. But I retired because, as far as I'm, the family comes first in your life. Your family comes first. The army comes second. The army is important, and it comes second. But if they don't treat your family right, I mean, I could not see my wife sitting in Petawawa, 40 below, for a whole year by herself. You know, and going through the winter trying to, change the snow tires or get stuck, four little kids. No, it's not. She was here where her mother lived next. You know, her mother lived here, and mother could help her. Her parents were elderly, but her sisters were here and all that. She would have some life while I was away for a year. And I didn't mind going away for a year. I mean, that was part of my life, and I would have went. But you gotta have a feeling for the families. You know, okay? It's select a place of resident was a normal thing to do years before, but now they were trying to save money. They were cutting back on everything. And that was your liberal government doing it to us. They cut us down to where, what did Lou said? We could all fit in the football field at Toronto Stadium, all of us.
With room left over.
Room left over, yeah. It's terrible. It's terrible, you know. I forget how many we had when I joined. 300,000? We had 1 million during World War II, and then they went up. I forget how many we had, but we had lots of people. There were all kinds of people in jobs like staff sergeants and all that were from Korea or from World War II that were in militia jobs, you know. And I can remember they were saying, remuster or release. I remember I was making out the messages and sending them out, and I said, oh, geez, I know this old guy, you know. And he told him, and he had to go back from sitting in Regina somewhere in a militia unit to coming back to a field unit where you have to run every day, that wasn't fair. But they did it to him. Then, of course, the guys couldn't keep up with that, so they released them medically, or if they wouldn't, they refused to remuster. You know, they were pay level 5. I was a combat clerk, so I was pay level 5, but they were, clerks, or they were. Clerks are pay level 3 in those days. So if they were, and they didn't want to remuster the infantrymen, they would get a raise in pay, but they didn't have to do all the stuff an infantryman does. If you were sitting in your rear end as a clerk in Regina, relaxing, watching TV, going to work on Saturday afternoon or Tuesday night or whenever they paraded. It was a pretty good job. And they were all over the place. They were all, they shut those all down. They pulled those people in, and they made them. I remember Shorty Lottridge came in from, he was in somewhere up in the north there. He was in a small town, and they brought him in.